I appreciate the opportunity to speak in this class during Vacation Bible School and the opportunity to talk about Moses. I know from God's standpoint that He may not have a list of people that are more important than others, because anybody that considers the one talent man and the two talent man just as important as the five talent man doesn't really rate people as we tend to rate people. And I'm sure that anybody that is a good servant of God and His sight is great, and anybody who's not is a problem. But if I were rating Bible characters from my standpoint as I see what happened as revealed in the Word of God, I think I would have Moses near the top of the list. Moses is one of the outstanding men that is talked about in the Bible. He had some problems, he made some mistakes, and yet I think I would put him near the top of the list of those who have been great leaders and great men of God in days gone by. Back a few years ago, when George Bush was president of the United States, there was a little story going around that went something like this, that President Bush died and went up to the pearly gates. One that met him there said, "Is there anybody that you would especially like to talk to?" And he said, "I'd like to talk to Moses." And the story says that they went and found Moses and said, "Moses, President George Bush is out there at the pearly gates and he would like to talk with you." And Moses said, "I don't want to talk to him." He said, "Well, now he's a pretty important fella down on earth and he'd like to talk with you." Moses said, "I don't want to talk to him." He said, "I can't understand why." He said, "Do you remember what happened to me the last time I talked to a Bush?" Now, if you're wondering what that has to do with the lesson, not a thing. Not a thing. I want us to begin tonight in talking about Moses in Hebrews, the 11th chapter. This will be sort of our text. If you have an opportunity during the week, I hope that you will read a rather lengthy discussion about Moses that is in Acts chapter 7 in the speech that Stephen made. But in Hebrews 11, beginning at verse 23, "By faith Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents because they saw he was a proper child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandment. By faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Through faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he that destroyed the firstborn should touch them. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, which the Egyptians, essaying to do, were drowned." Many of the outstanding people that are talked about in that Hall of Fame chapter in Hebrews 11 are mentioned only in one or two verses. Go back in the earlier part of the chapter and you look at Abel in verse 4, Enoch in verse 5, Noah in verse 7, Abraham not only in verse 8, but a few more verses than that. But Moses probably is mentioned in a more lengthy discussion in Hebrews 11 than any other one who is talked about in that chapter. Just let your mind wander for a moment as I try to guide it in thinking about some passages in the Bible that emphasize Moses and what he means. Usually when we talk about the old law, the law of the Old Testament times, we call it the law of Moses. And I suppose the reason for that is, one reason is, that the law was given to the children of Israel through Moses. He is the one who went up and received the Ten Commandments, broke them one time, went back and received them again. John 1:17 says, "The law came by Moses, but grace and truth came by Jesus Christ." At the Mount of Transfiguration, when Jesus was transfigured and two people appeared, you remember who they were? Moses and Elijah, probably representing the idea of the law and the prophets. And Peter on that occasion made the mistake of trying to equate them with Jesus and suggested they make three tents or tabernacles. And God made it very clear that Moses and Elijah were not on the same level with Christ. He said, "This is my beloved son. This one is the one who is my beloved son. You're to listen to him." But isn't it interesting when only two appeared on that occasion that it was Moses along with Elijah? In Revelation 15:3, we have the verse from whence the two songs came tonight, or the idea in those two songs. In heaven we'll sing what? The song of Moses and the song of the Lamb. Right along with the song about Jesus, the song of the Lamb, he says there we'll sing the song of Moses. And I thought the singing was just especially good in those songs a few minutes ago. Can you imagine if a group like this can sing like that, what it will be like when we get to heaven? Have the opportunity to sing the song of Moses and the song of the Lamb. In Acts the 7th chapter, beginning at about verse 20 and going through a large part of that chapter, Stephen, as he was speaking and tracing the history of God's people, had a lot to say about Moses. And we will probably refer to some passages like that and some of the things in that passage as we go through this week. In Hebrews, the 3rd chapter in verse 2, it talks about Moses being faithful in his house as a servant. It goes ahead there in Hebrews 3 in the next few verses and points out how Christ is over his house. But he says that Moses was faithful in his house. There are a couple passages back in the Old Testament that stick out in talking about Moses. One is in Numbers chapter 13 and verse 3. Moses, by the commandment of the Lord, sent them from the wilderness. Let me see if it's another chapter. I've got the wrong one there. One that talks about him being humble, most humble man. I've copied down the wrong verse on that. I knew I would keep on till I made a mistake. I'll tell you tomorrow night where to go to in Romans. Go to Deuteronomy, the 3rd and 4th chapter, and let's look at it for just a moment. Deuteronomy, the 34th chapter, verses 5 through 7. Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab according to the word of the Lord. He buried him in a valley in the land of Moab over against Beth-peor. But no man knoweth of his sepulcher until this day. And Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eye was not dim, nor his natural force abated. Very unusual statement about Moses at 120 years old. But we see in these passages that Moses is certainly a very important Bible character. When Gary suggested that I teach this class, I said, I think I would like to approach it from the standpoint of what made Moses tick. If Moses was outstanding, what made him outstanding? He was a great leader. What made him a great leader? He was a man of God in so many ways. He's called a servant of God. What made him such a great servant of God? Tonight and for the next three nights, I want to point out four or five things that I believe contributed to that. Tomorrow night, we'll talk about how Moses had personal preparation in the middle part of his life. He was 120 years old, and his life is basically divided into three sections of 40 years, isn't it? I don't believe that it was by accident that God let him spend those 40 years in personal preparation before he sent him down to Egypt to do such a great work in leading the children of Israel out. And I want us to think about what happened to Moses during those 40 years that may have contributed to his ability to be a great leader. On Wednesday night, I'd like for us to think about the idea of partnership and organization in the life of Moses. Moses did not really want to go down to Egypt when God first asked him to. And in connection with a series of excuses that Moses made, God said, I've got somebody to go with you. I'll send Aaron with you. He will be your mouthpiece. And I want us to look at passages where Moses and Aaron are sort of mentioned together as a team and see if we can't understand how teamwork with Aaron particularly contributed to the opportunities that Moses had and the success that he had. And then in the 18th chapter of the book of Exodus, we find a record of a visit of Moses' father-in-law to him just after they had come out of Egypt. And Jethro gives Moses a plan that seems to have contributed greatly to the success of Moses' leadership. And it was basically a plan of organization. So I believe that partnership, learning to work in teamwork, and organization, learning to involve people in different ways, contributed to making Moses tick as a good leader. And then on Wednesday night, the fourth night of this series, I want us to look at some personal qualities that Moses had, especially relative to his attitude. I believe that the attitude that Moses had toward people and toward God contributed greatly to his being the leader that he was. But tonight, I want to share with you for a few minutes, and there's a possibility we may come back tomorrow night at the first part of the lesson and deal with this a little bit more, with what I believe to be maybe the number one thing that made Moses what he was. And I have reference to his parents. I don't know how long Moses' parents had him. And I hope you noticed when we were reading there in Hebrews 11 that it didn't just mention his mother. It mentioned his parents. And it said they. Evidently, they worked as a team, as the father and mother. Now, it was the mother who did some specific things. And it was the mother who came when Pharaoh's daughter sent Miriam to get someone to be a nurse for the child. But Moses' father was involved in this perhaps even more than we think. Let's look back to Exodus, the second chapter, for just a moment. Paul Pinkley, when he came in tonight as Moses, referred back to many of these ideas that we'll be talking about. But Exodus chapter 2 says in the first verse, "There went a man of the house of Levi and took to wife a daughter of Levi." Now, this is important, especially in thinking about Aaron a little bit later on, because Aaron was the first what? First high priest, wasn't he? And the priests were to come from what tribe? Tribe of Levi. So we have a man from the tribe of Levi who takes a wife from the tribe of Levi. Now, this passage does not give us their names, but turn over to the sixth chapter of the book of Exodus. The sixth chapter of the book of Exodus at verse 16. And you see that he's talking about the names of the sons of Levi. He traces down a generation or so, and look at verse 20. "And Amram took him Jochebed, his father's sister, to wife." He married whom? His aunt. He married his aunt. And you remember back at that time that there was marriage in a closer proximity in the family and two members of the family than we would think of today. For example, Abraham married whom? His half-sister, didn't he? And even a couple times sort of misrepresented the case about it. But Amram took his father's sister to wife, and she bare him Aaron and Moses. And the years of the life of Amram were 137 years. So, plugging in the sixth chapter and verse 20 into chapter 2 and verse 1, the man of the house of Levi is Amram, and he took to wife a daughter of Levi whose name was Jochebed. And the woman conceived. And I just want to mention this in passing because it is so important today. And that is that he took her to wife, and then there was the conception. That was God's plan. And she bare a son. When she saw that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months. And you know the story then in the next few verses about the making of the little ark. And then down to verse 8, "Pharaoh's daughter said to her," to Miriam, "Go," and the maid went and called the child's mother. "Pharaoh's daughter said unto her, Take this child away and nurse it for me, and I will give thee thy wages. And the woman took the child and nursed him, and the child grew. And she brought him unto Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She called his name Moses, and she said, Because I drew him out of the water. It came to those in those days when Moses was grown, so So he went to live with Pharaoh's daughter sometime before he was described here as being grown. And maybe at that time that was around 40 years of age. But how long was Moses with his mother? The Bible doesn't tell us. I think we probably tend to think that he was with her a shorter period of time than he may have been. I don't know how long Moses' mother kept Moses with her. It may have been 4, 5, 6, 7 years. We don't know. But the reason that I believe it may have been longer than we sometimes think is what happened to Moses later on. When Moses went out and saw an Egyptian mistreating a Hebrew, did he recognize what was going on? Did he recognize who the Hebrews were? Where do you think he was taught that? I don't believe Pharaoh's daughter taught him that in the palace. There's no doubt that he must have had the opportunity to go to some of the best schools that were available at that time. Moses must have been an educated man and certainly had all the opportunities as the prince of Egypt, as we would think of. But where did he learn those principles that caused him to make the decision that he made at age 40? And where did he learn those principles that caused him to make the decision that he made at age 80? I suggest to you that more than any other factor that's involved in the life of Moses is the influence that his parents had on him. And Hebrews points out, as I said a few minutes ago, that his father was involved as well as his mother. And with all that happened in the life of Moses, those years that he spent with Pharaoh's daughter, I would guess to be at least 30 years, 30-something years, from the time that he was brought from his mother to live with Pharaoh's daughter until his age at 40. And then the 40 years that he lived in the land of Midian, he was living with people who were not of the Israelites, not associated with the Hebrews. And yet after 80 years, maybe 70-something years from the time that he left his mother's house, Moses still was able to recognize who God was, have respect for God, and be persuaded to do the work that God wanted him to do. And I suggest to you tonight that there is no factor that we will discuss this week that had a greater influence on Moses as a leader and Moses as an adult than what he learned at the feet of his mother and his father when he was but a child. And that's one of the greatest lessons that we can learn from Moses. She was able to teach him, and in fact, to be scriptural, they were able to teach him and instill in his youthful mind in those early years enough about who God was and who God's people were that at age 80, with all that had happened in between, he was still able to recognize that that was God's voice coming from that bush. And every indication is that he respected God for who he was. And everything that happened during those 40 years as he went down and led the children of Israel out of Egypt, I suggest to you, is dependent more than anything else on what he was taught in those early years. We need to be reminded of what's said in some very important passages to us. And I mentioned this to some extent in the morning lesson. In Proverbs 22:6, when he talks about training a child and the way he should go, what's the word right after train? Train up a child in the way that he should go. I think that little two-letter word up is significant there. Ephesians 6 and verse 4, ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And when Paul was talking to Timothy, he said, continue thou in the things that thou hast learned and hast been assured of, knowing of whom thou hast learned them, and that from a child thou hast known the holy scriptures, which are able to make thee wise unto salvation, through faith which is in Christ Jesus. 2 Timothy 3:14-15. And I'd like to emphasize in our thinking tonight the word up that's in Proverbs 22:6 and Ephesians 6:4 and the phrase from a child in 2 Timothy 3, 14 and 15. I just don't think we have come to realize how important it is to give the right kind of teaching to our little ones. I'm convinced more and more the longer I live that what happens in those first few years of training is the most important factor relative to the outcome as adults that we will see in the lives of those boys and girls that we teach. What made Moses tick? What made him successful? The first factor that I want to emphasize is his parents. His parents gave him something in a rather unusual setting, a rather difficult setting. But they gave him something that the Egyptians could not take away from him. The Midianites could not take away from him. Nobody could take it away from him because they instilled in him as a little boy, at least in those first few years. It may have been just 3 or 4 years. Might have been 6 or 7 years. I don't know how many. But they instilled in him as a little boy an understanding of God and God's people, and he never forgot it. We sometimes just do not understand how important it is for us to train our children in the right way. There is a statement over in Judges 13:12 with one of the judges that promised that he would be born. The father says, "How shall we order the child?" I've used that as a sermon title sometimes. I don't mean by that order out of Sears catalog either. But how shall we order the child? I believe he was pointing out the idea there that what can we as parents do with this baby and with this little child to set things in order in such a way that when he meets some difficult times and has to make some decisions out there that he will be equipped to do it. I think that's what Jochebed, with the help of Amram, did in those first few formative years in the life of Moses. What made Moses tick? His mother and dad more than anything else, perhaps, and what they contributed to him in those early years. Did I hear a bell? I said I would quit shortly after that bell, didn't I? I'm through. I've quit. We will not have an invitation song as such tonight, but let me just mention this. The invitation of Jesus is not bound to a song. And if there's anyone present tonight who has a problem or a need that we can assist you, please let us know, and we will be glad to take care of that and to help you in any way that we can. I want us to close with a prayer, and I'd like to ask Brother Gary Lyons, one of our missionaries who's visiting with us, to stand where he is and lead us in a short prayer. And then you are at liberty to do what you would like to do within reason. Let us stand and he will lead us in a prayer.